Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Doctor's Kitchen. Recipes, health, lifestyle.
The guy who's sort of running the night comes in and goes, did you instruct a load of people in in one of the rooms to leave? And apparently what she's done is she's grabbed everyone else in the room and like organized a sort of march out of. Now she's like, she's totally with it. She's doing this as a joke, right? And I'm really sorry that it probably wasted a couple of people's time that was working on that ward. But how wonderful is that, that you've managed to connect with this lady. And over the next couple of weeks, I'd go visit her. She was great.
That's brilliant.
Welcome to the Doctor's Kitchen podcast. The show about food, lifestyle, medicine, and how to improve your health today. I'm Dr. Rupi, your host. I'm a medical doctor, I study nutrition, and I'm a firm believer in the power of food and lifestyle as medicine. Join me and my expert guests where we discuss the multiple determinants of what allows you to lead your best life.
On today's bonus episode for books that I'm recommending for Christmas, we have Radio 1 DJ Chris Stark, co-host of the award-winning That Peter Crouch podcast with millions of listeners, and now author of the new student cookbook, initially titled Eat, Sleep, Rave, Reheat, and now changed to Eat, Sleep, Zoom, for obvious reasons. We chat about Chris's humble beginnings in hospital radio, his passion for the platform, spreading humor, and of course, that famous 5-minute interview with Mila Kunis that introduced him to the world of A-list celebritydom. I don't know how you say that. Plus his latest podcast and how that's led him all the way to hanging out with Prince William at the Kensington Palace. It's quite bonkers. We also talk about his future plans, following your dreams, and the importance of being your most authentic self. And I really like this aspect of the interview, and I didn't know it was going to go in this direction, but I think you're going to really see a different side of Chris that perhaps you're used to. His humor is amazing, and his experiences have really left a lasting impression on a lot of us through the radio show that he does every week. I really think you're going to like this episode. Let's get on with it. It's weird interviewing you, actually, because I hear you interview other people
so often.
No,
this is cool. So, this is the new way.
I just don't know where to start. Yeah. So I know I did a bit of digging around, actually, and I found out that your big break was Radio Northwick Park.
Yeah, that's where it started for me. So it's Radio Northwick Park's a hospital radio station, and when I was about 14 15, I realized that I really loved radio. I just loved it. I loved Radio One. I'd record bits off the radio and listen to it on the way into school. I was kind of fascinated by it. And then my parents got me this little electronic set. They were called a little 60 to 1. And basically, you could wire it up a different way. It's so nerdy. But you could wire it up a different way. It's dead easy to do. and I showed you how to do it. But one of the settings on it was that you could make a little radio station, which it would only travel about 3 meters. But it meant if I was on one side of the room, I could, you know, I could do a little radio show to my mum who's in the room next door through the wall. And yeah, that's where it started for me. I just became obsessed with that idea and made little jingles. And these little jingles was just me on a tape going, Radio Stark. And so then I realised I kind of wanted to look into all of it more. But even though I loved football and could join a local football team, there wasn't really anything like that in radio, especially at that age. Mm. And after a bit of digging, someone told me about hospital radio. And I'd never heard of it. And I'm sure there's loads of people listening to this that have, never heard of it. And you'd be surprised how many people who work in radio have started in hospital radio, because it was something at that age. I actually, looking back, I don't think I could join at that age. It took another year or two. But I went along and visited and had a little tour of it. And it was unbelievable. It was a studio. It was a proper studio. They treated it like a proper station. I'd argue, looking back, some of the people in it took it a little too seriously on that front, you know. But I quite liked that as well, because looking back, it forced you to have to prove yourself. And even though, realistically, there probably wasn't that many people listening. So the idea was it's a free radio service for anyone in hospital, which is a lovely idea, and it meant that if you couldn't afford TV in hospital, then you had hospital radio and you could get songs that you wanted played, and it was local. And I just loved it. I remember being so nervous on my first show there. And then I started doing Wednesday nights there, and it taught me a lot. And then it all just kind of went up from there, because the principle of radio isn't really any different. It's what we're doing now. It's just microphones, isn't it? And people talking. Mm. And then obviously you can play songs in, and you can get better at that, and you can get sharper at that. And but actually the principle, the stuff that I learned at hospital radio, it's kind of the same, and you carry it through and you improve it and you refine it, and you get a slightly bigger audience every time, every radio station that you move from there.
Yeah.
But really it's not much different. And that's what I've always loved about radio.
It's amazing, because you've been refining your craft now, like since you were a teenager, essentially, and you've just gone from strength to strength, but you've basically just followed your passion, your authenticity. You know, the interview that you did with Mila Kunis that just went mad on Radio 1 was just like you being you and just yourself.
But that's a really interesting point, in that radio for me was always a passion, but I was never good enough. In the sense that I did hospital radio. Mm. I remember we entered a hospital broadcasting awards, a hospital radio broadcasting awards, and came second. And I loved it, and we had a great night. But I always remember being so frustrated. I did student radio, and I remember at the student radio awards, we didn't win that. And then it was so hard getting jobs. It's so difficult to get paid to do this job. Yeah. And you've just got to be a bit relentless. And actually, you know, I've had other jobs on at the same time as I've been trying to get into radio. And I always say this. I always remember there was one night where I was really upset, because I just felt, look, what more can I do? It's like I've tried to find every crack that could conceivably give me a break in radio. And it was about 2 weeks after that, I got a call from the boss of Radio 1, who'd heard something I'd done on Radio 1 on the phone.
Yeah.
And just wanted to learn a little bit more about me. And the second that happened, I just didn't want to let it go. The first time I went into Radio 1, I always remember just loving it. I remember sitting there just thinking, God, somehow I've managed to get into this building. Because it's what I've always wanted to do. So from that point onwards, I was very keen not to leave. So I'd turn up early every day. Mm. I'd stay late. And then they didn't realise that I was only temporary. So they then wrote in a kind of floor plan for Radio 1. And then because I was always there, they just assigned me a computer. And at that point, I got a proper pass. And then they really couldn't let me go.
No way.
So it is kind of relentless. And as you say, there is, I don't want to say there's a high art to it, because I'm not the world's greatest radio presenter. But where I've started, I think, doing all right, is kind of accepting that I'm not the world's greatest radio presenter, and just tried to do what is me and in my own lane. And that's what's working out for me at the moment. I've just got a bit more confidence in being myself. but that's taken a long time.
Yeah.
Because most of the time I've been trying to get into radio, I've been pretending to be someone I'm not. And actually, now I'm there, I've realised that actually the reason I'm there and the reason that, you know, I think I'm doing all right with it is from actually having a bit of confidence and just being me and being, you know, a bit bang average.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, there's something that just so like endearing about honesty through the medium of like what we're doing right now, just talking into microphones. It's very analog considering all the technology and augmented reality and all the like fun, exciting stuff. But there's something that really grounds us, I think, of just listening to a conversation that's genuine between two people. And it's something that, you know, I describe it as you doing well, but it's just you being confident enough to be vulnerable and, you know, to essentially like have the mick taken out of you as well, if that's what people want to do. Like the interviews that you've done with some of the biggest celebrities around the world, it's just you being you. And, you know, people will laugh at that, but, you know, it's enjoyment. You're touching people in so many different ways.
Yeah, I'm not stressed about that at all. It's all part of the fun of it. And I think you're right. And I think this is why radio will never die. Mm. And I think this is why podcasts have become extremely popular, in that you can choose to do anything you want with your phone, right? You can listen to anything, you can watch anything. You've got the whole world, you know, on a device. Mm. And yet so many people are turning to podcasts. And I think it does something with your brain. I think when you hear humans talking, and when you're, if something, it triggers something in your brain different to when you're being really passive and watching some epic Netflix drama, which it does something different. And I've always found that, and that's what I've always loved about radio. It's what I loved about hospital radio right at the start. I loved the idea there was someone in a hospital bed. Not, I didn't love that, obviously, but I loved that we could try and, you know, play a song. It's the power of music. Yeah. And say something which hopefully just makes them feel ever so slightly better. And really only radio can do that. And I think podcasts can do that as well. And it's funny because it's kind of fashionable for everyone to have a podcast. Yeah. No offense, mate.
Yeah.
And I think it's fashionable for people to say that they enjoy podcasts. I don't mean that in that people don't really enjoy podcasts. I just mean that it's very now and people are happy to say that. Whereas radio has always been there. And I think people sometimes take radio for granted because really radio, or the radio that I love doing and the radio I feel that I'm lucky to make with Radio 1, has always been that. It's about trying to either help people, improve their day, do something that makes them laugh, do something that gets them thinking, and most importantly, make people feel special. Mm. And I think that's what podcasts are so good at, because there'll be people listening to this, and they're probably listening to this because they just want to be able to take one thing away from it or can relate to a bit of chat. Mm. And that's so special and that's so powerful. And yeah, that's why I guess coming back to it all, I feel very, very lucky that this is what I do. And yeah, I think I am good at my job and I have great ideas. And I'm so proud of everything I've done. And I'm so proud that I've managed to get from Northrop Park Hospital on a Wednesday night. My dad messaging me to hurry up because he's trying to dodge the parking at a hospital, which is obviously, it's very difficult to do. Isn't
hospital
it?
Parking is literally my bugbear. I've had so many fines throughout. I've been a doctor now for like 10 years and I used to work at Northrop Park. I used to work at North Middlesex. I currently work in West London as well. And I've literally paid thousands in fines, mate. They are relentless. They're worse than
council.
That's
outrageous. But explain that, because I always remember at the time I'd put my hospital pass in the window. Yeah. And just say, look, I'm doing the radio. I wasn't on yellow lines or anything. I was just in the car. Yeah. Park. And I always remember getting a fine and then saying to my mum, well, look, I can't afford this, so I'm not going to pay it because this is ridiculous. I'm doing hospital radio for free. You know, I'm not getting paid for this. I just want to turn up and do my job. And then it goes wider than that. You hear the same with doctors, nurses. Yeah. That can't park in a car park for free.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's the same. You go visit a family member that's ill in hospital. You want to spend as much time with them as possible. You know, what if you can't afford that?
Yeah.
And where are you going to go? When my gran was in hospital, we would visit Hillingdon Hospital, and the staff there were amazing. Mm. But the parking was, it was ridiculous. And I get you've got to have some control with it, because Otherwise, people will just park there and walk down to the station or whatever. But there's got to be a different way to this.
I mean, because you know,
you shouldn't be getting fined, it's just the whole thing seems crazy.
You know, like, people listening to this might think, oh, it's like a small thing, but actually, it's a massive thing because A, we're British and we hate getting parking fines, but B, it's those little experiences that can mar something that's already quite horrific for people going to hospital and witnessing their loved ones in a vulnerable state. And it's, I'll be honest, Chris, and I don't want to like digress into like a big political discussion about the NHS and why it's creaking at the seams, but it's those small sort of bureaucratic elements of our healthcare system that just has created this environment that is like just wading through treacle. That's how it feels sometimes. And it's little things like not being able to report a broken computer effectively, or, you know, the roster not being accurate. And so you're working three weekends in a row instead of what you should be doing so you can recharge. Or like, you know, the bigger things like the issues with nutrition in hospitals and that kind of stuff. And all these different elements add up as to why, you know, hospitals are not a great place, and they could be improved a lot more.
But the people are amazing.
Exactly.
You know, I had a situation where, you know, we were in hospital a bit last year, and I can't get over how amazing the people were. It was at John Radcliffe Hospital.
Oh, yeah.
And in a maternity ward there, and they were just they were amazing. And this is the thing, like, so many people I reckon listen to this and like myself would happily do more if someone could come and say to me, right, you can look after those guys by doing this and this. And fair enough, actually, I could go and look into it a bit more. I don't mean just send money.
Yeah,
I mean, like, there is an element of dignity around all this and looking after people that are looking after us. And yeah, okay, there's a political argument here about the role of government and governance and all that kind of thing. But I'm talking more as just someone that encountered these amazing people. Mm. And I'm sure there's more people like me that would like to give something back.
Yeah.
And we do, you know, obviously we all pay taxes. It's hard. There's not much time. There's not much money going around, it feels, at the moment. People are struggling. I get that. But I just wish there was something I could do that was more effective in giving back a little bit and helping them to help us, and just everything feeling a bit more positive on that front. But that's kind of very easy to say and much harder to do, isn't
it? Yeah, I mean, we're definitely brainstorming ideas about how you can make a more effective system. And, you know, there's the Clinical Entrepreneurship Programme, which is NHS Innovations, which is actually getting ideas from the front line as to how, A, they can help, but also, B, we can make a more effective public organisation, which is...
But do you know what? It's also the little things, though. It's like, as I was saying, like, in that maternity bit that I was in, you look at the walls, right, and you're in there and you're hearing some, you know, devastating stuff, right? And I find myself looking at a wall and seeing this beautiful little picture on there, and I asked about it afterwards, because then you end up having to be in that room for hours as you wait for results, and it's horrible and things like that. But the picture really stuck in my mind. Now, someone donated that. And they won't know when they donated that picture how much it changed. It didn't change my day massively, because I was having a really shitty day, if I'm being honest. Yeah. Really bad time. But it's things like that where I think, well, I'm talking about that picture now that someone, for one reason or another, has donated just to try and give a little bit, just that little half a percent that difference to someone that's in that experience. And I would love to know more of that kind of thing that people could do. I guess there is an element of common sense. Like, I wouldn't have thought of sending in a picture, but equally, I wish there was a list of things, you know, a bit like when you go to a wedding and there's a Christmas, not a Christmas list, when you go to a wedding and there's a gift list.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not talking about going and buying scanners for the hospital, because I'm not that guy. Trust me, I don't get paid that much. But I would love to know that if there was someone at that hospital that I could call and say, look, what is there a couple of rooms that need a couple of pictures? Mm. Or is there something I can paint if I was good at drawing? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Those little ideas. And it's those little things that I think it'd be fascinating at some point for someone to hopefully have a job in a hospital where they can explore what those little differences are that make quite big differences to people's experience.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And it's the kind of thing I'd love to be part of.
Yeah, it's like making it a bit more human, because obviously, you know, the government is there to fund the big things like, you know, the scanners and the walls and the buildings and all the rest of it. But then making it a lot more human, and those small touches like a picture or artwork in the foyer, or, you know, we used to have these, obviously not right now, but we used to have like choirs that came in, volunteers, obviously, amazing, all that kind of stuff, because they know that family's coming in during this time and it's not a very nice situation to be in, so we're going to put music on, all those different elements like that. And even the hospital radio, you know, the fact that they...
Yeah, well, that's what I loved about it. That's what I loved about it, because we'd go around and take requests. For the first 6 months of joining hospital radio, they wouldn't let you do anything on the radio. This was what was great about it. It was ran by people that, you know, I do love them, but it was very serious structure there. And actually, being young in that, I did feel I had to almost try and prove myself a little bit more. But before they even let me do something called a voice test, I don't want to put people off hospital already, because I'm sure it's changed a bit. I had to do 6 months of collecting requests around the wards. So every Wednesday, I'd go and meet people, write what song they wanted, tell them to tune in, and basically tune in their radio for them. Now, what... I at the time, I remember thinking, God, like, I just want to be on radio. I don't really want to be doing this. But then actually looking back, it focuses you on learning what your audience was going to be. And that's really important, because actually you're not doing hospital radio for yourself. It's great that you can learn the skills from it, but you're actually doing it for people in hospital. But most of all, when you go meet people, they might not have seen anyone all day or for days. And it's so lovely, and I do look back on it, being able to have gone round the wards and meet people. I always remember there was this lady, and there was a few elderly people in this one particular ward. I can't remember the name of the ward. I'm tempted to say Frederick Salmon Ward, or that's a name that sticks in my head from Northwood Park. But I was going around the wards, and there was this really, like, she was an amazing character. And I got talking to her, and she requested a song. Can't remember what song it was. And she was
there's a lot of elements to the story that are missing him.
I just want to get out of here. That's what she was saying. I just want to get out of here. But she was really chipper about it. She was great. And really got on with her. So took requests. Now, I went downstairs to the hospital radio, and I thought, well, she's made all these jokes about leaving and wanting to get out of there. So I played The Great Escape and dedicated it to this lady and all the other ladies that were on this, in this particular, I don't know what you call it, room in the ward. And didn't think much of it. And then we get a call down to the hospital radio, and the guy who's sort of running the night comes in and goes, did you instruct a load of people in in one of the rooms to leave? And apparently what she's done is she's grabbed everyone else in the room and like organized a sort of march out of. Now she's like, she's totally with it, she's doing this as a joke, right? And I'm really sorry that it probably wasted a couple of people's time that was working on that ward, but how wonderful is that you've managed to connect with this lady. And over the next couple of weeks I'd go visit her. She was great fun.
That's brilliant.
But it's just something that I always thought, isn't that the wonderful, what a wonderful moment in radio, that you can be downstairs playing The Great Escape and upstairs in this hospital ward, these couple of ladies have decided to go wandering down.
Honestly, it's just brilliant. It's those stories that keep us going as like people who work in hospitals as well. It's like, it's the humour, it's that human element of it, the image of that, a bay full of patients like sneaking out in the middle of the night. That's brilliant. That's so good.
No, it was such good fun. And you try out little ideas there, and you know, I feel really lucky that every day I can go to BBC with ideas and fun ideas, and we just get to do them.
Yeah.
And that is where it started.
Yeah.
It's nice reminiscing, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it is. It is definitely. And so obviously, look, you've turned your radio career into now a publishing career. You've come out with this amazing book, Eat, Sleep. Was it called Rave, or is it literally officially been changed?
Right. I do have a book out. I don't want to harp on about it, to be honest, because I way prefer what we're talking about. But it's where we met, basically. We met because we were doing the same TV show, right? And I was promoting this book. And I'm not here to promote it. But the problem is now I'm going to talk about it and it will sound like I'm promoting it. So please bear with everyone. But I'll tell you what it is. If you know someone going to university, it's a student cookbook that I've made. And I'm not a chef. I'm definitely not a chef, mate, am I?
But well, mate, you made a chocolate brownie in 90 seconds on live TV. It was pretty amazing, if I'm honest.
No, cheers, pal. It's a student cookbook. It's just loads of stories from my time at uni. I had the best time at uni. But it was actually my gran got me a student cookbook when I went to uni. And it's just been something I've had in my head for ages that I wanted to do. I'm really passionate about food. And I'd like to think it's the book that my gran would have got me back then. And I think she'd be proud, because when she got me that student cookbook, I genuinely couldn't cook a thing. I was the worst. Cooked pasta in a kettle. I've done all sorts. I mean, all sorts.
Pasta in a kettle? So, I didn't know that was possible.
Yeah, well, what I thought is, you know how you boil water in a kettle
yeah.
and then put it in the pan, but by then it's kind of boiling, so it speeds up the process. I thought, and also saving and washing up, cut out the middleman, don't need a pan. So I just put the pasta straight into the kettle and turned it on. It made this horrendous squeaking noise and then fused. But that was uni. That was my uni life. I went to Southampton Uni. Yeah. I spent most of my time doing student radio there and DJing nightclubs. Nice. And so I ate really bad. And I just wanted to make a student cookbook, which was fun. And yeah, listen, people aren't listening to this because they need to be sold, something like that. But if you do know someone that's at uni or you know, someone going to uni next year, feel free to check it out. It was originally called Eat, Sleep, Rave, Reheat. But then obviously I've released a student cookbook in the middle of a pandemic, just when it was looking like unis weren't even going to have students going back. So they quickly decided it should be called Eat, Sleep, Zoom after, you know, Zoom,
yeah.
Reheat. So yeah, that's where that's at.
So I wanted to specifically talk about the book, not obviously just to promote the book. Obviously it's a great book and I've read it and everything. Students right now are having quite a tough time. I can't imagine what it's like or what it would have been like going to medical school and not having that sort of connection and going out and with your peers and forming new relationships and strong friendships that I still have today, given the current scenario. So and also, you know, you've been passionate about radio throughout your whole career, all the way back, you know, to Northwick Park days, to what you do now. So I wonder if you've got any specific advice perhaps for students right now going through what they're going through and how to navigate what is quite a tough situation.
It is a really tough situation for students. The truth is, I think students have rightfully gone through a whole range of different emotions from upset to anger. You know, students don't go to university to be locked in their rooms, have a load of money taken from them, and then end up doing lectures which they could have done from home on a computer, you know. So I get frustrations around that. I hear so many stories of brilliant student communities that have been formed despite everything, despite not being able to go out, do the normal freshers. We get so many messages from people that have made new friends at uni, still managed to make it work. I feel sorry for students in the sense that you're not able to do the normal freshers week. You know, normally me, I'd be at pretty much every university yeah. this time of year, DJing freshers nights, and they are fun. But it's not the be all and end all. Uni was all about people. And I look back at uni and the thing that I miss the most is, you know, my housemates, my best mates from uni and spending time. And it's so tricky because that all comes with hindsight. And at the moment, this is a terrible situation for everyone. So, but specifically students, which is what you're asking, I do think it's a really tough time. I think like everyone and anyone else in this whole pandemic, you've just got to make the very best of it. that you can. And the flip side to that as well is that students need to be supported the very best they can. And that, I think, varies between universities, by the sounds of it, from what I've heard and from what I'm seeing. But most importantly, I think students need to also... they don't need to. I think students, hopefully, are still able to enjoy university to the very best, you know, that you can, given the parameters of everything. And it's so tricky because... I'm one of those types of people that always think, well, what can I do to help? Like, what can I actually say or do that helps the situation? The truth is, I can't. I just really hope students are able to make the very most of it. And it's a really tricky one to answer, isn't it? You know, I'm not a student. Obviously, I hear from lots of students and get a lot of messages on social media and. But I think there's a lot of, you know, a lot of students that I hear from are really positive. They've made new friends. They're having a good time at uni. It's just not ideal.
It's different, isn't it?
The best time. And also the flip side today is that's not an excuse for unis to not look after people properly. Yeah. You know, I've heard stories of students not, you know, getting fed properly and all sorts when they've spent so much money to then be told that they've got to be, you know, in a room or in a halls like that. I just hope every student's okay, because the thing that never really gets talked about with students, and it's only something I became aware of after uni, is how isolated some students can already be. Going to uni, although on the face of it, for someone like me, it was fun. You can go get involved in freshers' weeks, go out drinking. You know, that was my kind of lifestyle, so it was great. But for a lot of people, it's very hard going to uni as well. And you could be quite an insular person, being forced to suddenly, you know, in ordinary terms, go and party. It's very hard for a lot of people. And, you know, I've heard horrendous things about, you know, students. Without going too deep, it's, you know, students that have felt so lonely to the point of, you know, extreme desperation. And I just worry that in this pandemic, it's forcing people to that kind of point in so many different areas of life. I just really hope students are okay and can make the most of it. And, you know, as I always say, if there are students listening to this, you know, and you're struggling, it's okay to say that and reach out. And if you haven't got family and you haven't got mates that you feel you can do that to, then, you know, DM me, do something, talk to someone. It's a hard one to convey, isn't it? Because I don't want to sound doom and gloom, and there are students having a great time, and I'm sure there's students having a hard time as well. And I just think it's important everyone recognises both of those sides.
Yeah, definitely. I'll put
without being forced to pick a side as well. You know, it's almost like everything I see is, well, they should be just getting on with it. We're all having a hard time. It's like, no, it doesn't need to be like that. Like, we can appreciate that all sorts of people are having a tricky time at the moment.
Yeah.
I hope that makes
sense. No, totally. I mean, like, we'll put some resources down in the show notes actually for any students or anyone actually going through a bad time who want to talk about these things. The first thing, like you said, is to be able to have an outlet for all this kind of stuff. And I remember, like, on the subject of being like quite insular and introvert, I was definitely like that at school. And then suddenly when I went to university, it was just this explosion of activity and parties all the time, and, you know, events and DJs, and I was quite it was a bit of a shock to the system for me. I mean, I eventually like learned to love it, but initially I was like, oh, I don't know whether this is for me or not. I don't know whether I'm going to fit in and all that kind of stuff. And now, like, I just think it's probably harder. But, you know,
yeah, but you're a personable guy, right? I can see that. Yeah, and
now I am.
uni for us, it's a really... I think it's just always important to realise, and I probably didn't realise so much at the time, but I really think it now, that my uni experience is no better, no worse, no more valuable or less valuable than someone that does not want to go out partying, that does not want to be a fresher per se, that really has no interest in drinking or any of that. I kind of played the role of fresher whilst being a fresher. I used it as like, right, I've watched American Pie. I've watched like it was all a bit of a feeling of that. Yeah. It was suddenly, you know, suddenly there was freedom. But yeah, the other thing to say with that as well is student unions have great people, you know, ex-students often that are part of a student union. I also hope that anyone that's turned up at uni and suddenly stuck in halls or anything still has had an opportunity to understand how student unions work and how you can reach out to people there and that they are there to try and help you. They're not teachers. It's not like, it's a funny mindset to be in, but it's realizing that there's a union of people there that if you have any worries or concerns, you can, you genuinely can get in touch with. Even if it feels scary to do.
Do you reckon you would have done anything different at university? I mean, it sounds like you've done, you know, all your interviews and radio and all that kind of stuff, and you continue that throughout uni, but anything that you'd do differently?
Yeah, 100%. 100%, mate. I would have... At uni, you have a society for literally everything. Mm. So I wish I'd challenged myself a bit more. You know, I was DJing nightclubs. I started to earn some money by doing that. So I would often be very late at night, not wake up in the morning. I didn't go to lectures. I didn't go to seminars. And actually, looking back, I could have done even a little bit more and it would have made a much bigger effort. And then I fell behind and then I got stressed about falling behind. And then you're in all sorts of kind of trouble with it. And then I really stressed myself out. And then I remember going and meeting my tutor there and saying, look, I'm really sorry. I'm going to be honest here. I haven't been to any lectures. They knew I hadn't been to any seminars because I'd, you know, they could see on the register for it. But lectures, they never took a register. And I said, I just feel like I have got jobs in the evening. I'm trying to do the coursework, but I just feel so unmotivated. Mm. Eating crap, ironically. You know, don't get me wrong, I was happy, but I was super lazy, like, and unmotivated. And I do look back and go, if I'd gone and got involved in the lectures, I think I would have felt better. And the other thing is, I wish I'd gone to the tutor before, not stressed about thinking of them as teachers, because they're not. And I just thought I was going to get told off or kicked off the course. And actually, she really helped me and gave me an extension on the coursework. And
amazing.
And I caught up and I did all right. But the other thing I really wish I'd done is I had a gym membership and I went once. I wish I'd used the swimming pool. I wish I'd signed up to a few of the sports clubs at the lowest level. And I wish I'd gone and tried something new. I wish I could look back at that time and just go, right, there's something new that I learned or gave a go, because it's perfect time. And the other thing from uni that I really regret is you are surrounded by such talented people. Like, if you have an idea for a website, there is another student out there that can build it with you. And I just wish I'd collaborated a bit more with other people and thought how I think now then. You know, because rather than me having to pay money for someone to make a website or do this or do that, we could have all just done this at uni.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And we had all the resources there.
And all the time as well.
And all the time, mate, all the time. So I loved it at the time of my life, but it's a hindsight thing, isn't it? And it sounds maybe I'm more organised now to a certain extent. You've seen my organisation isn't the best, is it, man? But I would just say, like, it was a good time to, if you had good ideas, to actually make them happen.
Yeah. Talking about building things, you've gone from radio into podcasting now, and you've built this amazing connected audience and with the Peter Crouch podcast and all the other things you're doing. Where did that kind of stem from? Was that just like a natural evolution of what you want to do? Or did you just suddenly think one day, oh, I want to do a podcast and I want to talk about football and let's see if Peter Crouch wants to do
it? With Radio 1, we were already doing podcasts. So, for example, our show podcast was massive in that. But it was a bit different because it was essentially the radio show without the music. So the Peter Crouch podcast, they approached me about getting involved in that. And at the time, it was really, if he's being honest, it was because he had a book out and he wanted to sell the book. And the podcast was essentially just going to be an interview kind of thing with, and it's a really funny one, because when they approached me about it, it had a different name. I think the idea of it was different. However, everything I do on Radio 1, I saw an opportunity with this podcast that I felt I could perhaps change what the podcast was going to be there from a typical sports person podcast, maybe try bringing a tiny bit more of an entertainment element into it. And luckily, when I met Crouchy, he was exactly that guy, and that's exactly his humour, and that's everything that we ended up making the podcast. And it, you're so right. I think me, Crouchy, Tom, then the guys involved in making it, with the thing we're proudest of the most is just this community of listeners that message us with issues. It's almost like a safe space. A lot of blokes feeling that they can talk, which I love. I think the podcast is a good laugh. You know, we have a few drinks, yeah. we record it, and I love how many people it seems to sort of just give them a little bit of a smile. And it comes back to the hospital radio thing, doesn't it? It's exactly what drove me at hospital radio, I think, is what drives me with this Peter Crouch podcast. And then it's mad. We end up with, you know, the last episode that we did was with Prince William. Yeah. And it's just insane how you can go from, I mean, you really have got me thinking how it does go from that and just desperately wanting to get to Radio 1. And the whole thing is a bit
odd.
It's
bonkers.
But it's good. It's good. And actually, I think with the Crouchy podcast, anyone listening could do it. Anyone could, because what I like about it is it's just real and we have a proper chat. And it's a release for me, to be honest. When we record it, it's fun and it's a release for me. And I think that's what people like about it. It's like being in the pub with your mates. And that is almost, could be seen as a negative perhaps for how you describe a podcast, but I also think it's very powerful. And that's not to say we don't plan things and we don't think through things. It's, you know, there is an element of work that goes into it. But the truth is, I think we all talk honestly at times. We have a laugh, but we all talk honestly at times. And just at a very base level, I just hope we occasionally make people feel better. Same with Radio 1. Same with me and Scott. You know, I've learnt more and more as I've worked with different people. When you work with nice people, good stuff happens. Yeah. And that's the other difference with radio and TV. Like with radio, I can go into a studio, me, one other person, or a podcast like this, me, you. With TV, I think the reason I've never really got on with it that well is you have about 30, 40 people working on a TV show, and everyone's inputting, everyone's telling you what to say. You speak the words of 30 or 40 other people. And some people are amazing at TV, don't get me wrong, but that's why I never know where I stand with it. Like, I've always struggled with it a bit in that I love the process of radio. I love that we can do this and just talk. But with TV, I've always found it hard.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it that way, actually. But you're right, because there are so many different sort of obstacles and you know, checkpoints that you need to go through before you can actually say something on TV, because it's so precious. Whereas with radio or even podcasting, you know, it's just you, three other people, maybe a bit of prep. And actually, I was going to ask you how you prep for interviews, if at all, and particularly with the last one you did with the Prince as well, because that was literally like you were in the pub with him. I mean, you were having drinks as well.
It was mad. We were in Kensington Palace, and they'd spoken to us in the week about what drinks we want and stuff, which I thought was a great sign. And then we turned up, and he had a pint. We had about, the time got reduced for the podcast, actually. We were due to have a certain amount of time. Then it got reduced, which suggested he had some sort of meeting or something. And then we got about an hour in, and this lady said, oh, sir, you have your next appointment. And he basically said, no, we'll carry on with this, thanks. And then we ended up having a few drinks. It was great.
Brilliant.
He was awesome. He was talking all about his Heads Up campaign.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, like, I know a lot of people are cynical and what have you, but you know, when you go and have a beer with someone, you'd have to be the world's greatest actor to not let it slip. And he's really sound, and the stuff he's trying to do is really solid and really, really good. You know, he's got that thing that I'd like to think we have with the podcast, which is he actually does want to try and help somehow and help people. And that's why he was up for doing this type of podcast and just having a proper chat. Nothing was really off the table. He let us say what we wanted. He said stuff which, you know, I was amazed. I'd never really heard him talk like that. And I was just really humbled by it all. You know, it's just mad when you're a few drinks in with someone like him. It's a crazy experience. But in terms of prepping for an interview, yeah, I think, you know, that's changed over the years for me. When I interviewed Mila Kunis, I hadn't prepared at all. It was really last minute, and it was
a definitely,
you know,
ridiculous
situation. Yeah, and it went massive, but I think that was a really interesting time, because then that interview sort of told me it's okay just to talk about Watford and Nando's. And then the mistake I made was then I got lined up to do a couple more interviews. I think there was one with Robert Downey Jr., maybe another one, so I can't remember. And I went too far with it. I started thinking, it was almost like I think I got a bit cocky in thinking, oh, well, this is just the formula.
Right, yeah.
You talk about Watford, you... And actually, that wasn't me being real. And I think now the best bit of advice I've ever heard with interviews is just treat people like your mates, you know. And sometimes they're not going to be warm to that, but that's just, you know, the nature of things. But more often than not, if you just imagine they're your mates, I think you generally get a good reaction from them and an honest reaction. And the other thing it really taught me is you don't have to catch people out. You don't have to be looking at whatever is their big headline at the moment and try and get that out of them. Just talk about something totally different. It's more interesting hearing about Jennifer Aniston's experience of going on a girl's holiday when she was younger than it is trying to do what every other journalist is doing, which is to find out if she wants a baby or not, or something really personal.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? And that's kind of how I go and approach interviews now. And I try and think of areas of chat that would just be interesting rather than trying to catch them out. It doesn't need to be like that. And so there is a certain amount of prep that you do for interviews. And also you've got to have a lot of good ideas, especially on Radio 1, ideas of things to do with guests. Mm. So, for example, we get a few film stars on the show, and I came up with this idea of doing, we called it Playground Insults. And actually, it was a really last-minute idea. I was having a few beers out. I was actually in Reading. And we had Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell on the show the next day. But I got a message saying we had another idea for something we want them to do, and the film company really last minute had gone, they're not doing it. It's kind of what happens. These people all step in. It's not them themselves. It's like PR people. Anyway, so we needed an idea really last minute. And I was out having a few drinks. I don't know really why I thought of it. I said, right, let's just sit them in front of each other and they've got to do really childish insults. And I think it could be funny because they're funny guys and it's a bit silly. We did it and it went everywhere. I mean, mate, I think the YouTube alone was 20, 30 million views. It was crazy. And then we kept doing it with Hollywood A-listers, and the guys at work made it look really good, you know, built a set for it. And I think when I last looked, we were about 200 million views just on that one idea, which was from a few drinks out of Reading. But I reckon there'll be so many people listening to this that perhaps do what I do, which is write ideas on the phone. But then you never do it because, you know, life gets in the way, and we've all got jobs and mortgages and kids and whatever. And what I've started doing the last year or so is just really, whenever there's an idea that I put in my phone, I then try more and more now to, is there a way to make it happen? It's like the student cookbook. It was something that for ages I'd made excuses to not do it. But more and more I've just thought, why box yourself? Why has anyone got to box themselves? You know, even if you've got a job doing something totally different. Doesn't mean you can't go and do the other thing. And yeah, perhaps I can get doors open slightly easier because people expect they'll get something in return, you know, talk about them on the radio or mention them in social. Yeah. I don't know how they think. But I would also encourage people to not try and box yourself up if there is a kind of burning passion inside, because why not do it now? Don't wait to retirement. And if you're retired, go ahead and do it then. But what I mean is, like, sometimes the hardest thing to do is just sit down and go, actually, do you know what? I'm going to do this. I don't really care what people think. Family members, friends, they might laugh. But actually, why not? And I would always say, if there's anyone that's listened to this that needs any help with something they think I can help with, then reach out. You'd be surprised how many people out there are just a DM away from actually wanting to help or interested in helping.
Absolutely, mate, absolutely. Like, honestly, that resonates with me so much, because even when I started The Doctor's Kitchen 5 years ago, I thought about the idea, and it wasn't in my phone, but I'd written it down and stuff, and I just put it off and off and off because I thought people were going to ridicule me, and, you know, people didn't know why I was so passionate about it, or whether I knew what I was talking about. And that's why I encourage people to just do what they love to do, and just building that confidence yourself. And like you said, like, now you are literally a DM away from having a conversation with someone who could really help or just give you some advice. And now, particularly, you know, given the current scenario and how many people are losing jobs or financially insecure, this is actually a time for opportunity. A lot of some of the best companies with some of the best ideas have come out of recession and hardship. So now is the opportunity. And this is why I really wanted you to come on, mate, because I see what you're doing. I see where you've come from and you know, all the ideas that you go and you bring humor and a genuine sort of personality, which is why people warm to it. And I just wanted to know, actually, what your, obviously you've got the student cookbook right now and that's what you're passionate about and everything else, but what does the future look like for you? What are you passionate about? What's in your phone that you've been putting off?
What's in your phone? There's a podcast in that. The other point with that, we should say as well, is that I do think in this time there is also a kind of pressure to have to do something as well. For some people, it's a bit like you feel useless. So you hear of people, that's why everyone started making banana bread at one point. One person, I'm sure, did it. It's like, it's, everyone's got to feel, we've got to make banana bread. It's like, it's cool. Like, you also shouldn't feel pressure. It is okay to not do that, and really you shouldn't beat yourself up about a kind of perceived pressure to be having to do more. That's not what I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting is, if you are the kind of person that has something in sort of inside that you've always wanted to explore, you think to yourself, well, actually, I'm really good at art. I've never really thought about selling my art, or I've never thought about like, it's so funny where opportunities are. Like, I came up with a little idea with a friend of mine who's a commentator, and he writes these really neat match notes for every game. His name's Clive Tilsley. He's commentating on massive games. And me and him decided to set something up where we basically sell his match notes. Now, the point that I'm trying to get across here is, well, all of a sudden, I'm looking at these beautiful, we call them charts, commentary charts, right? I'm looking at these beautiful charts, but we haven't got any decent pictures of them. So I went on Twitter the other day and was basically saying, look, is there a photographer out there? This isn't, you know, a kind of, I want free photographs. I want to pay someone to do it. But actually, I bet you that rather than me just go to a photographer that I know, I bet you there are so many good people out there at that kind of thing. And that's what I mean. If you've got a hobby or an interest that's inside, and it's not about making this your full-time job, but it could be that one day. And actually, the most important thing is you don't leave this thing kind of inside and locked up. If you have an idea in the notes of your phone, there are people that you can contact if you haven't got the resource for it, that might go, well, actually, I want to be part of this, and I've got the equipment to make it happen. I've got the recording equipment. That's what I'm trying to get at, is don't shut yourself off for fear of, like, well, this isn't what I do, so I shouldn't be doing it. I'm in one lane. You should do it and you should feel empowered to do it. And equally, you shouldn't feel a pressure to have to do something extra as well. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
I just thought I'd explain.
Definitely, definitely resonates with me.
For me, though, the future, it's a really hard one, this. And it's something I've always battled with because I've always been convinced that I'm going to lose my job in the next 6 months. And ever since, and it's something that I've had growing up because I've had to try and find so many different ways to get into Radio 1 or to try and build up radio. I've never said no to anything. And now I've got this job, the weird thing I can't get rid of is a certain element of imposter syndrome. And I also can't get rid of this feeling that if I say no to something or if I don't do something, then it could all be over. And I've got kids now and a mortgage and everything. And I do feel a certain pressure, but I've really started to learn over the last year or so that that pressure is something I put on myself and that actually I am doing all right. And I've got to let myself relax. You know, I don't go... A lot of my friends go and play golf and a lot of my mates seem to have time to go and do some of this other stuff. And I used to go, oh, they just haven't got kids, so that's what it is. But now some of them have kids and they still go do some of those things. And I think it's because I at times take on too much. And I know why I'm doing it, because I can't shake this feeling that I had, which is a feeling of having to keep moving forward and keep doing things. And it's mad, like I'll sign a contract with Radio 1 and then the next day I'll be thinking, right, what do I need to do now? And it's like, God, just give yourself a break. And also a lot of time starts to move past, you know, and I do work hard and I do try and make the most of opportunities, but I also do want to start giving myself a little bit more of a break sometimes. Yeah. And this sounds deep and I really don't want it to sound moany or anything. I love what I do. I absolutely love it. But equally, I do recognise that that is a bit of a flaw in my matrix, which is that I struggle to just let myself be happy. I struggle to just let it go and kind of relax with myself and be comfortable. And maybe that's just because of the nature of the job that I do in and how I've had to get it. But I'm almost convinced there'll be other people listening to this that feel the same as that, and they don't do the job that I do. So I think it must be a personality thing, and I've got to figure out a way of doing it, because I love the idea of going away and playing golf with my mates. I'm crap at golf, but I love the idea of going and doing it. I love the idea of, you know, a few weekends away and stuff like that. I'm sure everyone does. But I've just got to balance that out a little bit more. And at some point realize that you can't go through your whole life stressing about the next thing. And so this sounds like a very long answer to basically say, I don't have a clue what's going on in the future, mate. But what I've learned is that, what I've learned so far is that it doesn't end. It keeps going. And one way or another, I've managed to figure it out. So at some point, I've just got to trust that that process works rather than fearing it so much.
There's so much I want to unpick with that. But one thing is that even if there is no one listening who can resonate with that, I definitely do. Because I suffer from imposter syndrome massively. And you know what? I think it's a big thing, Chris. I think a lot of people, regardless of what position they're in, whether they're in a business that they've started themselves or they work for someone or they work in medicine, you know, it imposter syndrome is a big thing. And I think we've lost that ability to be compassionate with ourselves. And because everyone's making banana bread or starting a company, there is that sort of constant pressure to do something. And I'm not a fan of giving advice when it's not solicited, but I will share with you one thing that I think's helped me and may help you. I don't know. But I wrote a letter to myself, like my younger self. It's something that I've listened to on a podcast that this podcast host does it with their guests at the end of the show. And you write a letter to yourself at an age where you had no idea what you were doing. And for me, it was around 14, 15 when I was doing my GCSEs. And you just write yourself a letter detailing, you know, how you're feeling, giving that person, your younger self, advice and sort of encouragement and sort of the knowledge that, you know, things are going to be okay. And that almost is a bit of a release for yourself in this present moment. They call it something like expressive writing or something like that. But that, honestly, for me, I did that very recently because I've got a few things going on. And the amount of release I had after doing that was really, really impactful. And I think it's something I'm going to try and do at least once a year, if not more often than that.
It is a really good idea. It's something we've actually started doing on the show where we get people on to write letters to their 10-year-old self. And it is amazing that.
Oh, right. Okay. I didn't realize that.
All the things you stressed about at the time, it is great to be able to talk to that person. It's not all rosy. It's a lot of hard stuff's happened in that time, and it's good to acknowledge and it's good to get it down. Mate, I've really enjoyed chatting.
Me too,
to you,
man.
Today.
Honestly,
I'm gonna have to go because my wife has just told me, ironically, she needs to go to the doctor's. I don't want to let her down on that as well. And I know we've gone on a bit longer than we planned, but it's been totally worth it. And thank you so much for this
mate,
podcast.
Thank you so much. Honestly, have a good day, and good luck with your wife. I hope everything's all right.
Yeah, all good, mate. And but let's do this again at some point. It's been fun, and thank
I'd love
you
that.
To you and everyone listening to this for letting me on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the episode. Remember, you can pick up a copy. Just go to the links page on thedoctorskitchen.com/podcast. And I will see you here next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.